Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Mad Dog Dynasty League headquarters in Maguanago, Wisconsin, Fat Guy with a Phone Productions proudly presents another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. It's time to enter the doghouse with the Kier plane. Waiting for a couple more guests to join us today, but we're going to get things rolling because we have a lot to cover, and hopefully we have a lot of really good guests today, and we don't want to run out of time. So I'm your host, the commissioner of the Mad Dog Dynasty League, and aforementioned fat guy with a phone himself, Rick Goreski. We're getting everybody back together tonight, or this morning, actually, and what is the first ever Saturday morning show to talk about the 2016 Mad Dog offseason. I think the critics are calling us cartoon-esque, so I guess this fits, Saturday morning action here. We're going team by team and division by division, reviewing the 2016 offseason. Today marks not only another step in this 15-episode marathon that, frankly, jumped the shark a long time ago, but it also marks the three-quarter mark for teams in the Red Division, the Red Division being the last of the divisions we're going to cover. Not because there's some other division out there that we're just not going to do. It's it. That's it. Before we can unveil today's team, allow me to add the we to me. Time to introduce my co-hosts for today's show. First up, you may recognize him as the voice of Snap and Pop from the old Kellogg's Rice Krispie commercials. Please welcome the owner of the Malicious Minds, Tom Buckles. Good to have you with us, Tom.
You got it. Great.
Quite the acting range, dude.
You got it, brother.
Snap and Pop.
Yeah.
Next up, the tone setter. He's also an amateur age and weight guesser in his free time. I like Google Train. Please welcome Steve Roman. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Hey, thanks, Rick. Trey Richardson, Arthur Brown.
Moving on. Let's see if he's here. Oh, Kidoki, he is here. The only team for the Red Division to ever win a league title. 2012 league champion. And defensive line enthusiast, the owner of the The owner of the Minotaurs who are marauding, Brian Koch. Brian,
hey.
Does one maraud? How does somebody maraud anyway? Is that like an angry parade?
It's an angry attack.
So it's like it's an angry parade. I was right. In my mind, as I was writing that, I was like,
defense.
Yeah, I think it's like an angry parade. Everybody in sequence. Hey, thanks for coming on the show, Brian. What's that?
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me in.
Well, we potentially will have another guest. I'll keep checking to see if they show up. But right now, at the very least, we've got us four, and that's going to work. Gentlemen, we're down to the final two teams in this Marathon 15-part 2016 off-season series. Today's show centers around Brian Koch's Marauding Minotaurs of the Red Division. And, you know, Brian, I just realized that you have red hair and you're in the Red Division. How cool is that? That was totally not planned. I mean,
that
wow.
That can't work out any better for anybody else.
Mad Dog
probably
just went up and
out of that.
He has red hair, he's in the Red Division, and he's won the only title. So how much money that the other three guys dye their hair?
Well, it sounded like Tom was about to offer a trade. I don't know if he was going to trade some brunette for some red, or I wanted to hear where this was going.
I'm going to trade some blue division for some red division action here.
I'm telling you, dude.
So you want to trade right now to move out of the blue division and enter the red, and I'll move out of the red and move into the blue.
Well, when you get some free time, come hit me up. The trade across the road.
we can do that straight up. You know, we don't have to really think too hard about it.
Oh, guys, look at how we fall in. I'm going to mute you two. Look at how we fall into awesomeness. What other league can boast that? Steve's turning gray, right? Not long before that goes white, so that's the white division's covered. That means all we need is Tom or Andy Wellman, who was supposed to join us, to dye their hair blue. That or just shave it all off and hold your breath. Whatever works, man.
Well, Andy's pretty old, so he's kind of considered a blue hair already, isn't he?
Well, there you go. Well, listen, yesterday's show got crazy with Crazy 7, and I guess there's still some hangover there, obviously. Today's show is all about those marauding Minotaurs. You guys know the drill. As quickly as I can, I'm going to recap the Minotaurs' moves, signings, cuts, draft choices, trades, everything. We're going to go back in time. I've got Ancestry.com up. We're going to follow his lineage. Possibly back to the Minotaurs. Anyway, here we go. I'm going to go over the way that the Minotaurs finished 2015 statistically, so that we can get a taste of where the team was at, as you know, from a starter by points position standpoint. At quarterback, the league average was 394. The Minotaurs finished third at quarterback in the red with 413 points. Whoever's doing a home improvement project, please stop. That's the fifth best in the league, but only good enough for third in the red. At Oflex, the league average was 929 points in 2015. The Minotaurs finished last in the red division at Oflex with 882 points. That was fourth lowest in the league. Surprising to me. Tight end, league average was 197. The Minotaurs finished last in the red with 178 points. Once again, fourth lowest in the league. At place kicker, Brian's 125 points were a hair under the league average of 128. That put Brian last in the division at place kicker, 1 point behind Show Me Your TDs, who had 126. Would anybody like to take a guess at where this point total placed the Minotaurs in relation to the rest of the league? Fourth lowest in the league. A little theme there for a while. Defensive line saw the Minotaurs finish in third place in the red with 363 points on the season. The league average was 340. Last but not least, D-Flex, where the league average was 1,330. The Minotaurs finished with an impressive 1,460 points, which, if you can believe it, was only good for third in the red division. Third most D-Flex points in the league, but only third best in the red. Talk about a tall order. The red division can be a monster at times. So there you have it. You might want to revisit that trade real quick, Brian, and throw in a player. That's where the Minotaurs ended 2015. The Minotaurs roster today stands at 37 players. He has $23.34 in cap space available. As for the history, despite playing in a rough division, this team has finished below 500 only once in their history, and that was last year when they finished 6-8. Every other year they were 7-7 or 8-6, and they ended up tied for second, or they ended up in third place. That's really consistent. That's very consistent in a really good division. So the Minotaurs obviously have some tools to work with as we look at the moves they've made this offseason. Let's start with the signings, as we always do. Blake Bortles was signed to a 3-year deal at $12.74 a year, promptly signed and traded to the Malicious Minds as part of a big deal that we're going to be talking about. T.Y. Hilton of the Colts, wide receiver, signed to a 3-year deal at $4.96 a year. Jace Amaro of the Jets was signed to a 3-year deal at $0.50 a year. Place kicker Blair Walsh of the Blair Walsh Project, 3 years, $2.02 a year. Stephen Tuitt, 3-year deal at $2.62 a year. He was signed and ultimately traded to the Malicious Minds in that blockbuster deal I mentioned. K.J. Wright, linebacker from Seattle, was signed to a 3-year deal at $4.43. There was an early signing that took place with the Minotaurs as they wisely locked up Andrew Luck. Luck missed a little bit of time last year, so Brian was able to lock him up on a 3-year deal with only a 10% increase. $7.59 for a stud quarterback is, I think, something many of us would take on any day. There were two signings that the Minotaurs made and then backed out of early as I segue into cuts. Alex Smith was signed to a two-year deal at $6.13. Minotaurs exercised their right to tear up that deal before the league deadline. Didn't like something he saw on the x-rays, I guess, for Alex Smith. And Ryan Kerrigan, linebacker Washington, same thing, signed him to a three-year deal at $440 a year initially and then exercised his right to tear the deal up. Other cuts for this team, Larry Fitzgerald was released. Vernon Davis was released. Corliss, the tight end who, believe it or not, is with the Detroit Lions now. Coons from Cleveland, the place kicker, was released. Robbie Gould was released. And I already covered the guys that he went through and chose to, you know, exercise his right to back out of that deal. Let's kick over to the draft, where the Minotaurs ultimately ended up with two draft picks. They made a lot of trades, including the first, kind of what I considered to be the trade that really set the tone for what would be the wildest trading session in league history. Well, again, we'll cover trades in a second. They ended up with two picks, including the third overall pick in the first round and the third overall pick in the second round. Joey Bosa, defensive lineman from San Diego, was the third overall pick. And in the second round, DeForest Buckner, defensive lineman, San Francisco. So the Minotaurs went out and took the top two defensive line players off the board early in this draft. As far as trades, the Minotaurs, I was mentioning the blockbusters that they were part of. They were part of huge trades this year, five to be total, five in total. First trade, they acquired Eric Ebron, the tight end, young tight end from Detroit. In exchange for Eric Ebron, the Minotaurs gave up Rams former defensive back, now categorized as a linebacker, Mark Barron, and a 2017 fifth-round draft pick. That was the Eric Ebron trade. The next trade was made with between Tom and Brian, Malicious Minds, Marauding Minotaurs. The Minotaurs gave up Blake Bortles, quarterback, Jacksonville, the Blair Walsh Project, Stephen Tuitt, and the fourth overall pick in the 2016 draft. In exchange, the Malicious Minds gave to the Minotaurs Emmanuel Sanders. Emmanuel. Place kicker Mason Crosby of the Green Bay Packers. 2016 third-round pick, ninth overall. And then they gave them their 2017 first and second and third-round picks as well. So lots of draft picks in that trade. Some big names, too, as far as players. Next trade was crazy in the Malicious Minds, myself and Brian. I gave Brian Jason Myers, place kicker Jacksonville, and Arthur Brown. Minotaurs gave me the fourth pick in the second round and the fourth pick in the fifth round. Next up was a trade with Tron's Pap Sixer. This was the one that I was referencing that kind of kicked off the training frenzy that occurred during the draft. Early in the morning, the Marauding Minotaurs traded Dez Bryant, the ninth pick in the third round and the fourth pick in the fourth round, to Tron, and Tron gave up the third pick in the first round and the third pick in the second round. So that's how Brian got those defensive line, the picks that became the defensive linemen. He gave up Dez Bryant, he gave up a third and a fourth round pick, got back the first and the second. And the last trade recently happened, kind of a swapping of good wide receivers. Show Me Your TDs gave up Randall Cobb of the Packers and Kendall Wright of Tennessee in exchange for the Minotaurs giving up Michael Floyd of Arizona and Chandler Jones, linebacker Arizona, who used to be a defensive lineman. There you go. That's everything from the Marauding Minotaurs, the Minotaurs of which are marauding. Why are you angry? I feel like we need a shrink session here. Why are those Minotaurs angry? We're going to get comments from the panel, but before we do that, Brian, could you tell us what your goals and philosophy were heading into the off season? So you round out 2015, you make the curve into 2016. What's going through your mind about your roster? What were you hoping to do?
Yeah, that's kind of a tough question to answer because sometimes I don't think. I'm like a dog, you know, that chases cars, and once I get that car, what am I going to do with it? So that's kind of like my philosophy. That's me. But in all seriousness, I try
a marauding
to
dog?
A marauding, crazy, psychopathic dog, yes. But to go ahead and answer this and kind of go forward with it, you know, I felt that ending last year at the bottom 25% of the of the league, I felt my team was better than that. So I felt like I had to obviously shake things up, and I felt the best way to do that was through some of the trades. Sometimes I do show a little bit of impatience as opposed to waiting for a player to develop. I go ahead and I trade away players that are still need that extra year or two to really make those major impacts that you're waiting for. You know, in hindsight, I talked about maybe trading away Andrew Luck because of last year's performance. But knowing Andrew Luck is a competitor, knowing that he is a guy that's, you know, the future of the NFL, I hung on to him. But there was some slight talk of moving him. But it's just a matter of, you know, again, it's sometimes the impatience. Yeah, I just kind of sometimes got to know what I'm going with my team and my players and hang on to them just for that hair, for that season or two longer before I cut ties with them.
I got you, man.
All right.
Can we turn, if you're cool, I want to turn the show over to our co-host to find out what they think about your off-season moves. So, generic, go ahead, Brian.
No, go ahead. Go ahead with whoever you wanted to next. That's all.
If you got more, I'm okay to sit back.
No, I'm good. Go ahead.
Okay, so, Steve, you're in the lead today. What would you like to talk about, or what were your kind of overview comments about the Minotaurs,
well,
those angry dogs that they are? They're off-season.
First, after that heartfelt confession from Brian there, I think we've made a lot of progress in our fantasy football therapy session here.
They're going to be the happy Marauders.
we're turning a corner. We're turning a corner here in our trying to help Brian realize what he's doing when he's not,
the happy
when he goes into his Bruce Banner. He goes from Bruce
the skipping
Banner to
Minotaurs.
The
Hulk. We'll do that on the recap.
Let's just
show.
Go
we'll
with,
come up with new names.
Let's go with mildly irritated but willing to accept what he cannot change, Minotaurs.
Go with the Stripes reference, willing to learn.
you know, obviously, the 400-pound marauding Minotaur in the middle of the room is the trades and acquisition during the draft. So that's always going to be kind of the focal point of anything we talk about. I thought that he had a pretty good team. Obviously, you know, giving up guys like Bortles, you know, who could have been, you know, a solid piece for years to come. I personally, I'm baffled. I don't like to question other owners, so I won't question him. I'm just got to say there's just some moves that he made that I just wondered what his direction was going. But if he's got a plan, all I can say is, you know, go with it, stick with it.
Steve, I think you just nailed a new radio personality. So every time you say, I don't really like to criticize other owners, so I'm going to hand the phone over to my friend Jake and then blast a guy in a different voice. That's fantastic. Tom, could you tell us your impressions of the Marauding Minotaurs offseason? Or do an impression of it if you want to get theatrical.
No, I'm waking up here. No, just kidding. Actually, I like that the deal, like I said, with him where he ended up catching all these picks for next year. It's a heavily offensive loaded draft for next year. And to have 2 1s, 2 2s, and 2 3s is going to go a long way for the squad to fill any spots. Slash running back position, offensive flex area, any other that offense should be able to fill it, no problem. The only problem I saw was the trade to, I know he was out of first round, but to get back in.
been overcooked, I guess. So I would have liked to see him get something better in return for throwing Dez Bryant to Tron. I would have liked to have seen him catch at least another first rounder or at least a second rounder. He should have got at least one more pick in there somehow, whether it be next year or not, in the trade to make that deal happen.
Well, my personal comments before we move it forward is that it was a really good offseason with key moves. I think what ends up happening, and Brian, we're going to be looking to you to talk about this, is the drafting of the defensive linemen always throws, for people that aren't you and didn't have your strategy and philosophy in mind, it makes us think, like, what were you doing there? Okay, easy. All right, you took one, you took two. So we're going to give you a chance to talk more about that. In just a little bit, because I want to first start with the big trade, because I think you made several huge moves during the offseason, but two of the biggest were the Bortles move and the Bryant move. So let's talk about that Bortles move as we move to your quarterback position. You trade a good quarterback in Blake Bortles to Tom. You pick up some good players, and you pick up great picks for next year, frankly. You're stacked next year. Could you tell us about why did you trade Blake Bortles? You had Andrew Luck. Now you've got Nick Foles as your backup, which isn't that enviable. We don't even know if he's going to start or not. He was disgruntled. In fact, he's not, is he? He got cut and went to Kansas City, didn't he? Let me click on it. Yeah, he's out of it. He's a backup in Kansas City now.
Yeah,
so
Keith Keenum's the starter out there, though.
Yeah, so just, Brian, if you don't mind, walk us through your quarterback offseason. What went through your head? Like you said, you walked into the season thinking about trading Andrew Luck and then wisely didn't. Talk to us, buddy.
Well, that goes back to what I talked about a few minutes ago between Bortles. Bortles was hitting me with a cap space of almost $13 per year. And to me, to have $13 as a backup player, because I knew in my heart starting Luck was the smarter move versus Bortles, I just couldn't fathom having a $13 paycheck on my as a backup player. So I knew I had to move him. It was all about timing and finding the right person to be able to make that move with. You know, Tom, obviously, you know, he's always looking to make a move, and he and I, we talked for, first we went through emails back and forth and trade offers for about a half a day. And then finally, you know, one of us called each other, and then we were just able to hash it out over the phone. But I think all in all, I think it was pretty fair across the board. But as far as Bortles, again, it's one of those situations where you hang on to a player, and I prematurely probably gave him up. I really believe that Bortles can be one of the top quarterbacks for the next 10 years in the league. He has the size, he has the ability, he has the skill set. He has the team built around him with the wide receivers, tight end, running back. So I really think that that was a really good trade for Tom, and I think that he's going to go ahead and go the distance with Bortles.
Hey, Steve, throwing it over to – go ahead, Brian.
Well, and I was just saying about Andrew Luck, you know, I mean, I just couldn't see putting Andrew Luck as a backup quarterback, because I'm paying someone $13 a year versus Andrew Luck, who, you know, obviously he's Andrew Luck. You know, the guy is going to go ahead and have a monster career. I just hope he bounces back from the injuries he had last year. That's where I'm putting my faith into.
Steve, your comments about his generic offseason – it seemed like maybe you might not have traded Blake Bortles if you were the owner. My question to you was, the trade itself was Emmanuel Sanders and Mason Crosby and the ninth pick in the third round, as well as a first, second, and third round pick in 2017. And then in exchange for all that, the Minotaurs gave up Blake Bortles, Blair Walsh, Stephen Tuitt, and the fourth pick in the first round. Do you feel like that wasn't enough? Or I'm looking at that as a pretty good haul. If you're going to move a
that's
a pretty good haul.
I think that it was a good trade, but I probably would have put a right of first refusal on him and see where that went. I think the guy has got a solid defense, and so the only thing that was holding him back was his offense, and to have the ability to not have to worry about your quarterback is so huge, especially when you have to focus, or at least I would have focused on bolstering my offensive flex. So to know that I have the ability to start a quarterback under any given situation, luck's bye week, luck gets injured, whatever the case may be, at least I know I've got somebody in there who's going to make sure that that facet of my team doesn't skip a beat. Like I said, I won't criticize him for doing the trade, but I probably would have just put a right of first refusal, and if I lose him, I lose him.
Now, Tom, it's your turn to talk about the quarterback. You were part of that trade. What is your thoughts about, you know, your side and his side of that deal?
I guess the time will only tell as far as what comes out of those picks in his future for 2017 draft rookies. So on paper, it looks like a great haul. Again, we've talked about it over and over, too, that one of his key players on that initial trade itself, Tuitt, was a really tough one to get rid of and possibly wouldn't have been on there if, you know, the trade goes down or it comes down waiting, yeah. So I see that as being the only part of it that, you know, like in hindsight in his eyes, too, that it would be better if it would have waited or that wasn't in there. And there might have been a few other tweaks in the trade, but going into that trade, that was probably the cornerstone of what was going to make me give up, you know, that first, second, and third next year, is knowing that he was going to be thrown into that deal. So I was okay with that. I felt like my offensive flex was fine. And as we talked before, quarterback, you can get, you know, a guy that could be a possible future top five guy, top eight quarterback in this league, plug in, just start and just don't worry about a guy. You do it, you know. Brian did as we always said. Everybody, you know, you put your chips into the middle of the pot, take a swing for the fence, and I think that's kind of what we both did on that one. We both decided, you know what, let's try this and let's give
he
it a
said,
shot and see what happens.
Let's do it.
Hey, the only thing I could say about this is that I'm sure your work isn't done, Brian. With only Nick Foles as the backup, you're clearly going to be in the market for something at backup quarterback. Let's move to your offensive flex position. Fourth lowest in the league, which, frankly, I was surprised by. I was shocked that you didn't score more points because I never looked at your team as being weak on offense. You had, on last year's team, you had Doug Martin having a great year. You had Dez Bryant, who, yeah, he got injured, but you have a Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd, T.Y. Hilton. Hilton, obviously, in hindsight, you look at this and you're like, yeah, that makes sense. Hilton didn't have a quarterback for most of the year. Dez Bryant got injured. You know, that makes sense why the rankings may have been down for a year. But now this year, I thought you did a great job of inflecting youth, young, good players like Cobb. Well, I don't want to overstate it that he's, you know, like a rookie, but he's still, I think, in the first half of his career, if not in his prime. So lots of good years left for Cobb. And then Hilton, you've got Sanders you acquired in the deal. Could you tell us about offensive flex, what your ideas were, philosophy?
You know, to go ahead and obviously break that down, I do believe more in the wide receiver position versus the running back. And, you know, I really wanted to kind of make sure I was wide receiver ready. You know, you talked about my team a little bit there. Trevon Austin had flashes of brilliance last year. We had games where he put up 24 points a game, then, you know, 20 points. Then he had games where he put up two or four. So he's really a wild card, and I'm really hoping that Jeff Fisher is going to utilize him more going into his, fourth year now as a pro. Randall Cobb, he just hit it. You know, I mean, it was a trade with Scott with that to get him. I had to trade away Michael Floyd, who I think has potential upside to really make a difference in the game. But next year, he was out of contract. So what do? You know, you trade him while you still got value and while you got leverage, or do you go ahead and, you know, hang on to him, then you got to pay him top dollar next year possibly.
you know, so that was kind of a tough call for me to do. But as far as the whole, I thought it was a good trade between myself and Scott to go ahead and move Cobb and Floyd together. Devin Funchess, word coming out of camp, he's doing excellent. He's hitting stride. It's come Cam Newton's one of our top favorites picks, so I'm really happy with that one. T.Y. Hilton, coupled with Andrew Luck, I think they're going to be formidable this year. I think that they're going to be real solid. And then you got Patterson, who I traded away a second-round pick a few years ago. Patterson has not developed the way I thought he was going to be. So, obviously, what the Vikings did is they went out and they drafted a wide receiver in the first round. So, I think Patterson might be on his way out of the NFL within a season or two. And then you got Emmanuel Sanders, who I thought was a good trade between Tom and I. Sanders, 29 years old. I figured he's still worth about two or three more years, so that's why we put him on a three-year contract. I just hope that the quarterback situation in Denver kind of takes shape prior to week one. I really wanted to get Emmanuel Sanders in there and start playing him hardcore right out of the gate, but that whole quarterback situation kind of scares me yet. And then last but not least, I got Kendall Wright. And I think Kendall Wright is right there with, you know, a lot of potential in the right system. They exercised his fifth-year option right now this year. So see what happens. You know, maybe because it's a contract year, he'll blow up and have a huge year. And then next year he'll be worth nothing because he got his money.
Guys, just a quick time update. We got about 12 and a half minutes left, so I'm going to ask everybody to just pick up the pace as we roll through. Patterson, I do want to mention the big word around all the talk shows that I listen to is that if he gets released by the Vikings and goes to a team like the Patriots, like the Packers, a team that just throws the ball more, his talents may finally be realized. So I don't know if I'd walk away from that completely at this point. Brian, I think, in my opinion, to be very short on your old flex, I think the beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I think some people would look at your old flex from last year and say, oh, I like that better. Some people would look at what you did this year and like that better because they like this player better than that player. I think it's kind of moved some pieces around, got a little bit younger. My big question to you has to do with the fact that you didn't put a right of first refusal on Fitzgerald. And I wondered why not.
He's $8. I think that I could probably go ahead and get him for $8 again. I would have only signed him for 80 cents more, you know, if I wanted to keep him for another year or two. In hindsight, now that I've kind of switched up my team and at the point when I cut him and now that I've kind of mixed up my team a lot, I got a lot more salary cap space where that $8.80 probably would have made sense for a one-year contract. But, again, I sometimes kind of think prematurely where I go ahead and I make moves, I do things, and not utilizing the full time span that I have to make a decision on a player.
Hey, Steve, could you talk about the old flex position, please, and then Tom?
Well, I think he did a good job with the exit of Dez Bryant, bringing in some other pieces to help bolster that up. So, you know, as far as the moves that he made, setting aside the draft, I think he did a pretty good job of shoring that up, getting some good players in there that are going to give him a boost over last year.
And to add to that, I do like the Emmanuel Sanders pickup. I still think he'll do fine with whatever quarterback's there. T.Y. Hilton's going to improve on the stats since him and Luck have a Manning, Marvin Harrison-esque type situation there. And I do, too, believe in the Funchess. I do think he has a chance to make a nice giant step this coming up year. The only one I had that question on was Kendall Wright in that deal, a $581 contract for a guy who hasn't put up yet, but we'll see.
Gentlemen, thank you. Another call was coming in, and I appreciate you carrying the show. Let's move on to the tight end position. Brian, you, and again, let's keep it going fast. You traded for Eric Ebron. You had a tough time at tight end last year. Is it safe to assume that bolstering your tight end was part of your offseason plan?
You know, Jason Miles was a
second round draft pick by the Jets a few seasons ago. So I believe that he's worth some money there. Eric Ebron, first round draft pick. Scott just kind of gave up on him. I know his first two seasons were tough. Zach Ertz, again, the quarterback situation with him is having a rookie or possibly Sam Bradford there. It's kind of tough, but I think I'm feeling confident about my tight end position. I can play matchups all season long.
Steve, any comments on the tight end position?
Nope.
Tom?
I guess the only thing I would say is that I like the trade of getting rid of Eric Ebron. Or getting what he did get.
I was
going to
say, what side are you on there?
I'm cool with what he did. Yeah.
I think it's an upgrade, getting the young tight end, and people have to be patient with tight ends, more so than we, in a redraft league, we don't think of it this way. In a dynasty league, you got to give him more time. So I thought Eric Ebron was a nice shot in the arm for this team. Kicker, he picks up Mason Crosby, grabs Jason Myers. I think that is an improvement. And we're moving over to defensive line. Brian, defensive line expert, you've been a good sport about all the teasing on this. We're all glued to your comments here because, with all kidding aside, you made some controversial moves by trading away Dez Bryant, a guy who top 15 defensive lineman. You traded away to it. The Bryant trade netted you draft picks, the first two that became defensive linemen. You and I have had comments about this, so I know what you were thinking, but could you be so kind as to share this with the listeners? What your strategy was at defensive line, and then Steve and Tom jump right in after him.
Yeah. Again, I traded away Steven Tuitt, which was, I can't say it's a huge mistake.